Coming up, as Pope Francis prepares a major statement on the family, Deborah Potter looks at some of the more controversial topics he may address, including divorce, remarriage, and same-sex marriage. And the Aga Khan. Lucky Severson had a rare opportunity to talk with the leader of 15 million Ismaili Muslims.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome. I'm Kim Lawton, sitting in for Bob Abernethy. Thank you for joining us. This coming week marks 5 years since the beginning of the civil war in Syria, a war that has claimed at least 250,000 lives and generated the worst humanitarian crisis since World War II. A new report from Save the Children details the war's devastating toll on civilians, especially children. The group says more than 250,000 children inside Syria live in constant fear for their lives. Most of them lack secure access to food, basic medicine, and clean water. The report said children in besieged areas are being forced to eat boiled leaves for their one meal a day. Meanwhile, half of Syria's pre-war population has been displaced. Neighboring countries, as well as European nations, continue to struggle over how to deal with the massive numbers seeking refuge. A new report from the Pew Research Center highlights the strained relationship between Jews and Arabs in Israel. According to the report, nearly half of Jewish Israelis favor the expulsion or transfer of Arabs from the country. And while 21% of Israeli Jews say there's a lot of discrimination against Muslims, 79% of Israeli Arabs hold that view. The report also explores deep divisions between Orthodox and secular Jews. The study found that while 62% of Israeli Jews believe democratic principles should take precedence over religious law, 89% of Orthodox Jews say religious law should come first. Pope Francis was among numerous religious leaders and human rights activists condemning a militant attack against a Catholic retirement home in Yemen last week. A priest was kidnapped and at least 16 people were killed, including four nuns from Mother Teresa's Missionaries of Charity Order who were handcuffed and shot in their heads. Francis called the nuns today's martyrs. He said the attack demonstrated the globalization of indifference about the political and economic chaos inside predominantly Muslim Yemen. Catholic leaders in Mexico are pushing back against critical comments the Pope made against Mexican bishops during his recent visit there. In an unusually harsh speech to the bishops, Francis spoke out against pride, careerism, a lack of transparency, and the materialism he said can lead to corruption. This week, an unsigned editorial in Mexico City's archdiocesan newspaper argued that the Catholic Church is well managed there. The editorial suggested that some bad advice may have triggered the Pope's comments. Also this week, after looking into allegations of financial abuse in the Church's complicated sainthood process, Pope Francis imposed new accountability regulations. Two recent books suggested there was little oversight of how money donated to investigate sainthood causes was actually spent. Many have criticized the process as favoring candidates from wealthy countries. The new reforms are intended to provide more open accounting. Next weekend, Pope Francis may release his greatly anticipated response to a key bishops' meeting on family issues that took place last fall. At that meeting, bishops discussed the church's response to a host of issues, including some that are very controversial. The bishops were especially divided over whether the church should change its rules against communion for divorced Catholics who have remarried. Many American Catholics have been pushing for that change and others. Deborah Potter reported on some of the difficult family issues facing the church.
Born and raised Catholic, Mary Margaret O'Connor thought her marriage would be for life. When she divorced, going to Mass wasn't easy.
You walk into a church, it's loaded with families. So if you're divorced and you're alone, you walk into this and there's just so many reminders of what you once had, but don't have anymore.
Even so, she kept going, but some of her divorced friends stayed away.
So I started saying, all right, to my friends who are divorced Catholics, first word that pops into your head, you're a divorced Catholic, excommunicated. What? Excommunicated. Oh, come on, we are not excommunicated. Yeah, excommunicated.
The amount of misinformation about marriage in the Catholic tradition boggles my imagination.
Father James Halsted teaches a course on marriage at DePaul University in Chicago. Divorced Catholics, he says, are not excommunicated, deprived of all sacraments, and they haven't been for more than a century. But the perception lingers, largely because the church teaches that marriage is a symbol of Christ's relationship with the church and cannot be broken.
The Roman Catholic tradition is no. You're participating in something bigger than you are. That is a natural institution created by God in the beginning, sanctified by Christ, a sacrament, and you're part of it. You didn't invent it, and it's not yours to make whatever you want. That's a colorful conversation when you do premarital counseling.
Any divorced Christian wanting to remarry in the Catholic Church must have the previous marriage annulled, decreed invalid by church authorities. If they remarry without an annulment, they're considered to have committed the mortal sin of adultery and are banned from taking communion. How many American Catholics are affected? Researchers at Georgetown University provided the numbers.
More than one in four Catholic marriages in this country end in divorce. That's a lower rate than the general population, but it's still 11 million people. An annulment would allow them to remarry and remain full members of the church. But only 15% of divorced American Catholics have gone to the trouble of getting one.
You go through all the pain that you went through while you were going through a divorce.
Dodie Carney had her marriage annulled 7 years after her civil divorce. She was never denied communion, but she had divorced friends who were.
I think the church was concerned more about legalism and instead of compassion for the individual. And when you're going through a hard time, the best thing you can have is Jesus inside of you and receiving communion. That's when you need it the most, is when you're hurting.
American Catholics have long been out of step with the Vatican on major family issues. Almost two-thirds of Catholics in the United States believe couples living together should be allowed to receive communion, according to a recent survey, and three-quarters want the church to approve the use of contraception. Some Catholics who want the church to change its stance on family issues have taken heart from recent actions and comments by Pope Francis.
Nell'amore e nella verità verso i battezzati che hanno stabilito una nuova convivenza dopo il fallimento del matrimonio sacramentale. In effetti, queste persone non sono affatto scomunicate. Non sono scomunicate.
He's made annulments simpler and quicker. He's called divorce sometimes morally necessary and said abortion can be forgiven. And of homosexuality, the Pope asked, who am I to judge?
That's how the connection was made.
Oh.
Luis Garcia grew up Catholic and studied to become a priest, but he did feel judged as a gay man and walked away from the Catholic Church 30 years ago.
Bottom line is, I could never show up to church with a boyfriend. I could never imagine having my union recognized. I had to keep details of who I was separate from my spiritual life. And as someone who has served in the church all of his life, that made me feel dishonest.
Like many former Catholics, Garcia found a new church home, in his case, an Episcopal church, where the liturgy feels familiar and where same-sex couples can marry.
Easily 40% of the members of this congregation started their faith journey and their life journey in the Roman Catholic Church and now worship here. So it's not just me, it's a lot of us.
According to a recent survey, only 1 in 10 Catholics who leave the church ever returns.
They would rather go to Willow Creek or another non-denominational church because those churches have really help them rebuild their lives, where the Catholic Church has not helped to rebuild anyone's life. It's hurt people more than it's helped.
O'Connor has found an ally in her parish priest, who's helping her organize a new ministry for divorced Catholics.
We need to bring people back into the communion with the church and around the Lord's table, and I think that will be beneficial, not just for us as a parish, but as us for a church in the world.
On the one hand, you know, in a church where there are declining numbers of people, why not open the doors and be as welcoming as possible to people who really want to be a part of this community? And yet on the other hand, if you allow for wiggle, more than wiggle room, if you allow for some changes in practice, what does that do? Let's stick with this for a minute.
Good.
Because this is significant epistemologically. So what does it mean to be in a particular standpoint?
Susan Ross chairs the theology department at Loyola University, Chicago.
The church is, in a sense, caught between its own rock and its own hard place. Justice, on the one hand, requires that the canonical requirements for marriage be followed. Mercy, on the other hand, says, wait a minute, these people want to be part of a worshiping community. They want to participate fully.
Pope Francis has urged a pastoral response to remarried Catholics and gays, but he hasn't spelled out what that means.
He knows what can change politically. He knows what can change doctrinally, what can change canonically, and he's a rather shrewd political guy. I have no idea what's going on in his head, and I think he likes it that way.
I pray for him every day, because it's very brave for him to come out and say, we must do more to welcome back divorced Catholics, and that divorce is sometimes morally necessary. So he's the first pope that's ever said that. My prayer is that everyone will listen to him. Just because he says it doesn't mean that you'll have the archbishops and the cardinals following suit.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Deborah Potter in Chicago.
Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards is scheduled to speak at Georgetown University next month, and the event has set off sharp controversy at the nation's oldest Catholic university. A student organization called Lecture Fund invited Richards, and many conservative Catholics are criticizing the invitation. In a blog, Washington Cardinal Donald Worrell claimed that a university which provides abortion advocates with a platform is not authentically Catholic. Georgetown says it is committed to a free exchange of ideas, however controversial those ideas might be. The Jesuit school also said it remains firmly committed to the sanctity and human dignity of every life at every stage. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom says India has denied its members visas to visit. Members of the commission had planned to travel to the country to assess the religious situation. In 2015, the commission included India on its list of countries experiencing religious freedom violations that should be monitored. The report also noted that religiously motivated violence had increased there for three consecutive years. In a statement, the Indian embassy said that a, quote, foreign entity had no standing to pass judgment. There are about 15 million Ismaili Muslims around the world. They're a subgroup of the Shia branch of Islam, and their leader is the Aga Khan, who traces his ancestry directly back to the Prophet Muhammad. The current Aga Khan is a wealthy philanthropist who keeps a low profile, but is engaged in fighting poverty around the world. Lucky Severson had the rare opportunity to interview the Aga Khan during a trip to Canada.
This is a beautiful musical rendition of the Islamic call to prayer. It's performed by Salim and Suleiman Merchant, internationally acclaimed composers of over 100 Bollywood films and television programs.
And we've made all our other hits, and they come and go, but these devotional songs, they stay on.
We might not be missionaries in its truest form, but in a lot of ways, we go out there and spread our love. through our music.
Salim and Suleiman are Muslims, Ismaili Muslims, a Shia sect of about 15 million scattered around the globe. Ismailis are unique, they say, because throughout history, they are the only Shia community led by a living hereditary imam in direct descent from the Prophet Muhammad. His hereditary title is Aga Khan, and it was the Aga Khan who inspired them to make devotional music.
Do you look at the imam as a holy man?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He's like a spiritual leader. Yeah.
We pray to him to pray for us. And the beauty of that is we have somebody who's guiding us through our days.
Is that heavy weight on your shoulders?
Every day, every second.
It is very rare for the Aga Khan to grant interviews. We caught up with him in Toronto.
You are a spiritual leader, a businessman, treated like a head of state. I think you were just with the prime minister yesterday. Which of those hats is most important to you?
The institutional hat, which is the hat that I inherited from my grandfather.
As a spiritual leader?
As the imam of the Ismaili community, by far.
He was only a 20-year-old student at Harvard when his grandfather bequeathed the title Aga Khan to him, bypassing his father, who was known as a rich playboy who was once married to the actress Rita Hayworth. The Aga Khan is both a billionaire who owns private jets and yachts and is welcomed internationally as a spiritual leader and for his work in social justice.
He is, interestingly, a very shy person. He doesn't like too much publicity. He seems to be a person who just wants to do his work quietly.
Professor Ali Ahsani teaches Islamic religion and culture at Harvard.
Actually, when you look at his history and you look at what he's accomplished, I do not think that there is any Muslim leader in the world today who has such a record of accomplishment.
The Aga Khan is the first faith leader to address a joint session of the Canadian Parliament.
We are active in the fields of economic development, job creation, education, healthcare, as well as important cultural initiatives. Our work has always been people-driven.
With the help of tithes from Ismailis, the Aga Khan presides over one of the world's richest charitable organizations. Although Ismailis don't see it as charity, they see it as their moral duty. The Aga Khan Development Network, the AKDN, is huge. It operates around the globe, but primarily in the poorest regions of Africa and Asia. The network has a simple mandate to relieve disease, deprivation, and ignorance for the people they serve, no matter their faith. The same is true of the network's many thousands of employees who come from all different faiths.
For Ismailis, faith consists of two dimensions. There are obligations to God, what we would say worship and prayer and spiritual growth and so on. And then there are obligations to larger society, especially the poor, the sick, the needy. One has to be engaged in social justice work. It's not only part of faith, but it's also an important part of one's spiritual and ethical development as a person.
Islam believes fundamentally that the spiritual and material worlds are inextricably connected. Faith is a force that should deepen our concern for our worldly habitat, for embracing its challenges, and for improving the quality of human life.
That is why the AKDN is at work at some of the poorest regions of the world, places the Aga Khan says are ripe for violence and terrorism.
Not only it comes from poverty, but frankly, in many areas, it's predictable. The question is, when did that become explosive? And how do you stop it from becoming explosive?
How do you?
Preempting it, changing the basics of the quality of life, and giving people a replacing despair by hope. People are driven by hope.
And in his view, hope begins with education. One reason his network operates academies and schools for both boys and girls, like this one in Mombasa.
Every human being has a role to play in this society. And the purpose of someone being educated is to one day go back to their society and help improve their society.
The AKDN oversees projects ranging from a cardiac surgery and cancer center in Nairobi and a hydropower plant in Uganda. The Ismailis are renowned for their contribution to the arts and Islamic culture, like the new Aga Khan Museum in Toronto, the first art museum in North America devoted to Islamic art and culture. Ruba Kanan is the director of education and scholarly programs.
Our core mission is education, is building bridges between cultures through art, through interaction and engagement around art.
The empires which functioned best, you had intellectual pluralism. Not only ethnic pluralism, you had intellectual pluralism. That is, the best qualified people in society, in medicine, in law, in space sciences, whatever it may be. They came together for the benefit of the community.
The Aga Khan Trust for Culture creates jobs by restoring ancient holy places like the Blue Mosque in Cairo and Humayun's tomb in Delhi.
Founded by His Highness the Aga Khan in 1977, the award has established a reputation as one of the most prestigious and coveted prizes in its field.
The Aga Khan offers a $1 million prize for revitalizing architecture. The AKDN helped transform the Al-Azhar Park in Cairo from a 500-year-old garbage dump to an oasis of beauty. The Aga Khan says the ethics of his faith guides everything he does.
Islam says that we as Muslims have to leave the environment in a better condition than we found it when we were born. In other words, Allah has entrusted to the human race the duty to improve work with his creation. And that's why the Aga Khan Trust for Culture is called a trust. And that's how the ethic of the faith comes into the way you work.
His title means great king, and his followers do treat him like royalty. In fact, they seem to adore him. Listen to 13-year-old peace activist Alina Nanji.
He teaches us how to be respectful. He teaches us how to care. He teaches us moral values of kindness. And you know what? I think we can all learn a lot from him because he is the one person that we can definitely say he walks the talk.
So have you met him?
Yes.
And what was that like?
Oh. Yeah, it's difficult to kind of describe that because he has so much divinity. It becomes very difficult for us to talk in front of him. And so singing is you know, even more challenging.
But there are those within Islam who do not revere the Aga Khan or the Ismailis.
During their history, the Ismailis have suffered a great deal of persecution at the hands of the caliphs, but also those who hold other interpretations of Islam. Ismailis in Syria have been also attacked or are being surrounded by ISIS on the one hand and Al-Qaeda on the other, because these are groups that generally don't tolerate the Shia, but particularly the Ismailis. So this history of persecution continues today.
Are you generally optimistic?
No. Frankly, no. I would hope that we would see a greater tolerance and greater acceptance of the divisions in society, because I think we're seeing forms of polarization which are very, very unhealthy indeed.
That's why the Aga Khan, who is 78 this year, travels the globe doing his best to alleviate poverty and practice tolerance. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson.
On our calendar, the world's Eastern Orthodox Christians begin observing Great Lent on Monday, Clean Monday. It's a time of fasting and prayer leading up to Easter or Pascha. Because they follow a different calendar, Western Christians have already been observing Lent for several weeks. This year, Western Christians celebrate Easter on March 27th, but in the Eastern tradition, it won't take place until April 24th. And finally, if you're feeling in need of a little international prayer support, Pope Francis has an app for that. In honor of this year that Francis has proclaimed a Jubilee Year of Mercy, the Vatican has launched a new app called Click to Pray. Three times a day, it reminds users to pray for specific intentions. It also lets people post their own prayer requests in multiple languages. If you pray for someone, you just click a button to let them know. That's our program for now. I'm Kim Lawton. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and I'd love to connect with you there as well. Watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. And next week, as President Obama prepares for an historic visit to Cuba later this month, we'll have a special report. Amid the new political openness, many Catholic and Protestant leaders see a new religious openness as well. Now, as we leave you, more music from Ismaili Muslim artists Salim and Suleiman Merchant.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.